Larry Huval, and you're listening to on the radio live the celebration of the 90th birthday of Hank Williams Sr. I'd like to get the curtains open just a little bit, and we're going to invite some special guests here to visit with us on stage. So folks that actually knew Hank Williams, talked to Hank Williams. And so let's see if we can get them on his stage right now. Let's see, they're a little slow getting here because of them a little old. Yeah, are y'all here? Y'all come on out. You know,
Jane is kind of shy, you know.
All right.
Hey.
Okay. Go right here. There you go, Johnny. It's Chris right here. All right. What we're going to do is, you know, a lot of people know about the special nature of Hank Williams, of his music, of his talents, I guess the drama and the tragedy of his life. But here are four guys that actually got to meet and visit with Hank Williams. And they are Chris Swear, Johnny Abdallah, Vin Bruce, and D.L. Menor.
Thank you.
And I know that there were others. I know there were others. But I thought it might be special tonight to let you guys hear a little something about people who met Hank, even though Hank was a superstar. So I'm going to start with Chris Swear. Chris, get the microphone right here, buddy. Where are you from originally?
I'm from Erath.
Get right to the mic. Right, about a quarter inch from the mic.
I'm from Erath.
From Erath. Right. Is that the same place he's from?
Yeah, I think so.
You all claim each other?
Yes.
So,
when we see each other.
So, Chris, you told me that when you met Hank Williams, it was because of an opportunity that came up. Kind of tell us about that. How did you get to meet Hank?
In 1951, in August of 1951, Cousin Dud had a call caravan.
And can y'all pick up the volume out there so you can hear? Talk a little bit louder. Talk with force. Like D.L., talk loud.
All righty. Can y'all hear me now? And that caravan carried all of the, well, actually, he had a train with coaches and roommates, and it carried all of his stars, his staff, and the workers. I had a roommate on this train, and at that time, I was privileged to meet Hank Williams personally lunchtime, in the morning, during between shows. And I learned, first of all, Hank Williams was one of my favorites, but I didn't know him personally. After meeting him and realizing that this man talked to me one-on-one, made me feel like I was one of his group, and really put me at ease. Since that time, I didn't only like his music, but I liked him. I was impressed with him.
Chris, you told me one time on the Hatter Call Caravan, which for those of you who don't know, is something that Senator Dudley J. LeBlanc from Vermillion Parish had sponsored to sell this patent medicine called Hattacol. And it wasn't that the medicine was that good, but it had 12% alcohol. And so all of the dry parishes and dry counties, that was some good medicine to take. And anyway, so you got to know him through that. And one of the stops you told me y'all had was one where Hank was waiting to see a very special person. Tell us about that.
Yes, we were sitting in the coach at that time where everybody met, anyway. And I could tell Hank Williams was a little nervous, and he kept looking out. From where we were sitting, we could see the passenger station. And momentarily, this lady showed up with this young boy with a big hat on, and he jumped up and says, "There's Bo Cephas." And at that time, he ran up and met him. And that also told me that he was a loving parent.
Well, thank you, Chris. I'm going to go ahead with this. Thank you very much, Chris Swearer, for that story about Hank. And Johnny Abdallah was another person. I got to meet him because his grandson and my son played football together. And Johnny told me he had met Hank, and I guess, kind of tell me how you got to meet him, how old you were then.
Well, folks, I was approximately 14 years old. I was going to Cathedral High School. And Kuzan Dunn was at the Hattie Call Caravan. And the principal at our school was Brother Stephen. He was from France. And he loved to speak French. And Kuzan Dunn rented Eisenberg Hall. It was a brand new gymnasium. At that time, it was a brick structure. That was unusual for a gymnasium in Lafayette at that time. And that was the headquarters for the Hattie Call show where they would rehearse. And my mother was born and raised in Abbeville, and she, Kuzan Dunn, knew my whole family, my grandfather, and I got a job loading and unloading. But I was already a Hank Williams fan, and I had a brother of mine that was 4 years older than me, who's deceased now, had a collection of Hank Williams Sr. records. And I was more fascinated with Hank Williams than I was with Bob Hope, Cesar Romero, Mickey Rooney, or Carmen Miranda. And I let him know that, and I stuck to him like glue.
So at 13 and 14 years old, this guy talked to you like Dale would say, like you were a real person.
He spoke to me, and he was amazed that I called out almost just about every song he had ever recorded. And he asked me if I had it on 78 and how long and how's my grades in school and I should stay in school and take care of myself and stay away from alcohol and drugs and to stay in good shape all the time.
And thank you, Johnny. Johnny Abdella.
Thank you.
Y'all don't go nowhere now. I don't know where Chris went to, but Chris, stay out here with us. D.L., now, D.L., you've talked about meeting Hank Williams, and you've talked a lot about the stories, but tell people how you thought Hank treated you when you were talking to him. Did he
look down on you?
How did he look at you?
You swear he knew me all his life. He talked to me like I was an old person, and I was 19 years old. I didn't even know I was alive yet, because I was picking cotton. I didn't know any better. But what I remember about Hank Williams, we'd buy a book and a picture. And he'd put it on the book and sign the picture. And I was right by him, and he was autographing, and the people bought the book. Bobby, I had a stack of books. And I remember this lady, like it was yesterday. I remember this lady, and there was a guy there. Naturally, he was drunk. There's always one in the crowd. So, and every once in a while, Hank would look at him, kept on signing, he kept on talking, shooting his mouth. Every once in a while, Hank would look at him. And this lady handed him the book and the picture. He said, wait a while, lady. He started taking his wallet out. It took about 10 seconds to take that wallet out. When he took that wallet out, it sprung open. And he took the first bill. Started giving it to me. He said, hell, he said, you got too much in your hand already. So he gave it to the little guy on the side of him. When he looked at it, he showed it to me. It was a $500 bill. And the first one he took, a $500 bill. And I've been looking for one ever since. I never was able to find one. But he told that guy, he said, I'm going to make the phone call. I'm going to prove to you that I'm Hank Williams. He said, focus this bill here. Or he said, shut your mouth, or he said, I'll shut it for you. I didn't know if I had to run away or still there. But I couldn't run away, I had a bunch of books. So that's what I remember. And he told me how to write a song, and he told me, you got to start your story, you got to, there's the middle, and then you got to end the story. You got to put as much as the story in that song in 3 or 4 verses. That's what I remember about it.
D.L. Minor, ladies and gentlemen.
Thank you.
Okay, now this fella here, Vin Bruce, was a real close friend of Hank Williams. In fact, when Hank got remarried in October of 1952, they actually had the wedding ceremony, or a second or third one of the wedding ceremonies, at the New Orleans Municipal Auditorium. And the band he asked to play for his wedding reception was Vin Bruce's band. Now, Vin.
Thank you. Thank you. No telling how many wives Hank had before. But anyway,
so Vin, tell a little bit how you met Hank and how you got that chance to play for him.
Well, First of all, the first song I heard about Hank was On the Banks of the Old Pontchartrain. This was in the late 40s, and my old man said, one day you're going to meet this man. And, I didn't want to say, well, at that time he's drinking wine, you know. I said, you better quit drinking wine. Anyway, we grew up a little more, and we started going to places. And this guy here from New Orleans, Henry Hildebrandt, spotted me singing on a radio station. And he got in touch with my manager. And they sent me to Nashville. And here I was recording for Columbia Records. And I... I gotta go back. We had a little spot on the Grand Ole Opry that you had a little filled in, so they called me. That was my first time on the Grand Ole Opry, and then I always forget this shit. Never forget this moment. The Grand Ole Opry I was on, and so I went and took a stroll on Louisiana. Nashville Strip, and Hank was at his record shop. He said, what are you doing here? I had the a belt. I bought a belt. And he said, what you doing with this belt? He said, well, I just bought it here. I said, and I was so nervous when I saw Hank, you know. And Hank says, I say, I'm going to be on the Grand Ole Opry. He said, you on the opera tonight? No way, you know? And it kept on, so he heard about me. He invited me for his wedding. We played his wedding, and we also sang for his burial. Thank you.
Ben Bruce, ladies and gentlemen. So we're gonna get started with the music in a bit, but we have something special to give to each of these guys here. Fill out the little history book looking, find out the dates that they would have met Hank Williams, and I got a special poster made for each one of them with that date and place. Johnny Abdella, Chris Swear, they kind of almost all look the same, but they have different names on them.
Well, that was the wrong Chris Swear.
That's right. So, ladies and gentlemen, thank these folks for being out here and joining us, and y'all get ready for a great show.
Thank you all very much.
All right, we had the Liberty Theater in Eunice for our big Hank Williams show. It's the first time we did a special show like that. It was an unusual circumstance for us. We'd always play Cajun music here. We asked in 2000 if we could come here and play. And Jenny Moody and the mayor said, you know, we're willing to give you all a try. We didn't know if anybody would come to the show and find out the place was almost packed. And since that time, we've seen so many great people here and had so many great artists. We even had Hank Williams, steel guitar player, with us many times here. But right now, we're going to start playing some music. And many of you never saw Hank Williams play live like these guys did. He was not only a great songwriter, he was a great singer and a great performer. And there's very few film clips of Hank Williams playing, but we have one here for you. And we're going to use that to help us start off the show. Thomas, Roland, Hank, sing some songs for us.
Spot right over the hill. There's soda pop and the dancing's free. So if you want to have fun, come along with me. Say, hey, good looking, what you got cooking? How's about cooking something up with me?
So how's about saving all your time for me? Ain't no more looking, I know I've been tookin'. How's about keeping steady company? I'm gonna throw my date book over the fence. Buy me one for 5 or 10 cents. I'll keep it till it's covered with age. I'm writing your name down on every page. I say, hey, good looking, what you got cooking? How's about cooking something up with me?
Hugh Harris.
Thank y'all a lot. Hold on, Barry. I gotta tell them something before we get started here. It still amazes me that we've done this for 14 years, and I'm not going to bore you because Terry already told you, but never speak the obvious, but yesterday morning, Mr. Murphy's Law caught up with me, and so you may hear me stumble a little while tonight, but the way I figure it, we all love each other, we're all good friends, we've done this for a long time, we all love Hank Williams, so we're just going to have fun, and if y'all overlook me a little bit tonight, we're going to do a fine show for you.
You woke up yesterday morning, couldn't even talk.
Not a word.
Been pumping hot tea and hot other things. For 2
Barry's
days.
Barry's been waiting to catch me when I couldn't talk for 14 years.
Yep. been working on it for 2 days, going to do the best he can. But yeah. Here, this is the way I figure it. Hank Williams had a pretty good career. I mean, he died way too young, as we know. But during times that he sang for crowds all over the country for years, I mean, he must have had a cold at some point. So you get a chance to experience a historic moment tonight. To hear Hank Williams as he would have sounded if he had a cold.
I sound pretty good for a 90-year-old man, huh? Is that what you're trying to say?
Before we get started, you know, we got this idea 14 years ago, 13, whatever it was, 2000, to commemorate the passing of Hank Williams. We did it somewhere right around New Year's. Right. He, of course, passed away sometime between New Year's Eve and New Year's Day, 52-53. But this is a little different because we're not commemorating his death. We're celebrating his birth. It's just a slight twist on the show. And we should keep in mind how grateful we should be that he was born at all and produced this amazing string of songs. Let's continue with Hugh Harris, something called Honky Tonk.
When you are sad and lonely and have no place to go, come to see me, baby. We'll go honky tonkin', honky tonkin', honky tonkin', honey, baby. We go honky tonkin' round this town. City, baby, you will find me there. We'll go honky
We got quite a few people are going to be singing Hank's songs tonight for us. Hugh, of course, and Mr. D.L. Menard that you saw earlier. Kind of hard to miss. Mr. Vin Bruce as well. And Terry's going to sing a few. And this young man right here, Mr. Pope Huval. And now you get to hear what it would have sounded like to hear Marty Robbins sing Hank Williams. No, I'm just kidding. Pope does a fine job on this, too. And what he's going to be doing for us right now is it came out in 1953, posthumously, one of the four songs from the last session that Hank did before he passed away, something called I Could Never Be Ashamed of You.
Everybody says you let me down. What a fool I was to kick you around. Makes no difference what we used to do.
Terry was mentioning earlier about how prolific a poet and a songwriter Hank was. Just to give you an idea, Pope's going to do a song now from a session. He typically recorded four songs in a session, and the other three were My Son Calls Another Band Daddy, Why Should We Try Anymore, and Long Gone Lonesome Blues. That's a pretty good string. Pope's going to do the other one, went to number one in 1950. Why Don't You Love Me Like You Used to Do?
Well, why don't you love me like you used to do? They say sweet nothing like you used to coo. I'm the same old bubble you've always been through. Why don't you love me like you used to do? Ain't had no loving like a hugging and a kissing in a long, long while. Closer than a country mile. Why don't you say that you used to say? Why do you treat me like a piece of clay? My hair's still curly and my eyes are still blue. like you used to do. You find so many faults with me. Somebody's changed, and let me give you a clue. Why don't you love it like you used to do? Ain't had no love like a hugging and a kissing in a long while. You don't get near further closer than a country mile. Why do you treat me like you do? And why do you say that I'm a worn out shoe? My hair's still curly and my eyes are still blue. Why don't you love me like you used to do?
With Pope Yuval. Pope. Mr. D.L. Menard is going to come out here, who not only met Hank, but this... channels his music. He's been doing that for a long time. DL, when he first started playing with his Cajun band around Erath, his job, his first job, was to sing the English songs, the country songs. Is that right?
It was what? I didn't hear you. I was a little too far away.
I said when you first started playing with Bado, your first job was to sing the country songs.
That's right. Especially Hank Williams songs.
There you go. Been doing it for a long time, so he should have gotten good by now.
You're right.
Yeah. We're going to check him out. 1951, the year I was born, this song went number 9. It was co-written with Jimmy Davis, our singing governor, something called Lonesome Whistle.
I was riding number 9. Inside from Caroline, I heard that song, walk, walk, some whistle blew. Got in trouble, had to roam, left my gal and left my home. I heard that song, walk, walk, some whistle blew. Just to get acting smart, I went through my door. All alone I found your name. I'm a number, not a name. I heard that long walk, walk, some whistle blew. Got in trouble, had to roam, left my dad. I'll be locked in this cell, give my body just a chill, and my head turns wider than snow. I'll never see that yell of mine. Lord, I'm in Georgia to end time. I heard that song. Some whistle blow.
Thank you.
Mr. D.L. Menard. This next song, one of the problems Hank had, of course, producing so many great songs, that sometimes the flip side was just as good. And it was the flip side This was the flip side of Jambalaya. Something came out in 1952, something called Window Shopping. Mr. D.L. Menard. We can bring out Vin Bruce, who, as you learned earlier, played for Hank Williams' wedding dance when he got remarried in 1952. And we were talking about that last session. This is another one of those songs from that last session. Went to number one after Hank passed away. Something called Take These Chains From My Heart.
Take these chains from my heart and set me free. You've grown cold and no longer care for me. All my faith in you is gone, but the heartaches linger on. Take these chains from my heart and set me free. Take these tears from my eyes and let me be just as part of the love that used to be. And if you no longer care, set me free.
set me free. Thank you.
Mr. Ben Bruce. Ben.
Yes, sir.
You were talking about playing his wedding dance. I'm just curious. Did you sing any songs at Hank's wedding dance that Hank had recorded?
Did I do?
You
what?
Sing of Hank any of Hank's own songs to him?
I did.
You did? Wow, man, that's nerve.
I did. You know, I just want to add this on that when I played Hank's wedding. We sat in the room, and I had this Martin, not this one, another Martin, and I had it against the wall, and Hank walked in my room, and he says, I want this Martin. And I was still paying notes on it. The fact. And so I said, the only way you can have this Martin if you sing Cold, Cold Heart. And he did Cold, Cold Heart. I hadn't met Hank before, you know. And he says, I know you record French. He says, why don't you put words to Cold, Cold Heart, you know. And so I did. But the Columbia people never wanted me to record Cold, Cold Heart in French. So that's why I never did. And then I lost my contract with Columbia Records, you know, years after. And I went on Swallow Records, and I did record Cold, Cold Heart in French.
I think we're going to get to that a little later tonight. Yeah. Now, here's another thing I want to ask, just out of curiosity. Did he sing at his own wedding dance?
What's that?
Did he come up and join the band at his wedding dance?
Did Hank sing at his wedding dance?
What's that?
Did Hank come up on the stage and sing at his own wedding dance?
Well,
or did he just dance?
We celebrated Hank's wedding on, of course, I got my wife here tonight. But I wasn't married. I was going out with my wife, and we went. Hank was too popular to really go on Bourbon Street or any street in New Orleans at this time. So what happened was, they came in our room.
They went to visit y'all in your room. I have to tell this story because I got both of y'all on stage. Festival Acadien, a couple of years ago, we were honoring Doug Kershaw, Joel Saunier, and Jimmy C. Newman.
Yeah.
And Doug was getting ready to play. And I was going to introduce him, and I didn't want to introduce him until he was ready to go. So he gave me the sign he was ready to go. I started introducing him. He put his fiddle between his legs to adjust his microphone, popped the bridge. And he had had about 3 Red Bulls at that point, and he's already nervous. So he started panicking, and he's looking around, and he doesn't know what to do. And Terry finally choked it down. And he said, go ahead, you can borrow my fiddle. Now, those of you who know Doug Kershaw and the way he plays the fiddle, in the middle of the first song, I looked at Terry and I said, Terry, you keeping an eye on your fiddle or you can't stand to watch? And he said, I can't stand to watch. And Vin's standing right there next to him, and he said, I know how you feel, son. I lent my guitar to Elvis Presley one time, and I couldn't stand to watch either.
You're right.
Now, just for a second, think about it. How many people on the planet can say, I lent my guitar to Elvis Presley? Yes. Anyway, we got this other song coming up.
So we have Vin. You know, back years ago, we had Don Helms, Hank's last living musician with the Driven Cowboys. I played with him many times here on this very stage. And Don, I mean, had actually recorded some of Vin's earlier records with Columbia in the 1950s.
When Hank died, Hank's band come back from Hank's band, and they joined the group in Nashville in recording a lot of us, you know. Like, I did a lot of songs with Hank Ben at that time. And probably his one of it, you know. Yeah.
And so, anyway, so Don, on Ben's last CD, Don actually did a little introduction to this next song here, and we're going to play the voice of our good friend, Don Helms.
Hi, friends. This is Don Helms, one of Hank Williams' original Drifting Cowboys. It was my pleasure to record with Ben Bruce over 50 years ago, and it's good to be back on record with him. Ben, good luck to you on this cut right here.
Thank you, Don.
Darling, let's turn back the years and go back to yesterday. Let's pretend that time has stopped and I didn't go away. We had our love to make us happy. It wasn't meant to bring us tears. Love like ours should never die. So darling, let's turn back to years.
Ben Bruce. He'll be back. Terry's going to do one for us. He's going to do Don Helms and Hank Williams at the same time.
Pilot job.
Something that came out after Hank's passed away and went to number 4 in 1953, something called I Won't Be Home No More.
Well, you're just in time to be too late. I tried to, but I couldn't wait. And now I've got another day. Oh, won't be home no more. I spent the night to turn around and ride your buggy back to town. You look me up, I turn you down. And I won't be home no more. I stood around a month or two and waited for you. Trouble through the moon. They call around next day or two.
celebrate the things you didn't calculate. You're just in time to be too late, and I won't be home no more.
Yeah, Mr. Terry Hubaugh. Not too bad for an engineer, huh? You know, Terry's become a well-known Cajun musician, rightly so. But when I first met him, he had a band called, I think it was a Silver Dollar Band.
Actually, the original Jambalaya Band with Picard back then. That Silver Dollar Band, and then came to this.
So he'd been doing this a long time, too. He got pretty good at it, too. This next song is representative of one of things that Hank was very, very consistent in doing all through his career. He always had some spirituals. He had some rocking, honky-tonking, no-good-loving songs. But then he had these things that you'd sing in a church, too. And he crossed both bridges. Something called Be Careful of Stones That You Throw.
A time and a few can carry bad news. The seeds of distrust in old souls. But unless you've made no mistakes in your life, be careful of stones that you A neighbor was passing my garden one time. She stopped, and I knew right away that it was gossip, not flowers she had on her mind. And this is what I heard my neighbor say. That girl down the street should be running for my miss. She drinks and she talks quite a lot. She dare not speak to my child or to me. She then smiled, and I thought, car speeding by and screaming and brakes, a sound that made my blood chill. For my neighbor's one child had been pulled from the path and saved by a girl like this. The child was unhurt and my neighbor cried out, oh, who was that brave girl so sweet? I covered the crushed, broken body and said, the bad girl who lived down the street. A kind and a few and every bad news. The seeds I've distrusted old soul. But you mess in me, no mistake in your life. Be careful of stones that you throw.
Can you imagine being in a bar and hearing that on a jukebox? Well, you wouldn't, because that didn't come out on a jukebox.
Well, no. I think Hugh Harris, who's our degreed professional up here, might say that what would happen is that Hank loved these old songs, but Hank sang for a honky-tonk crowd, and a lot of the jukebox operators would buy a lot of Hank's records to play in honky-tonks. And the last thing they wanted was a Hank record that gave a sermon. And so they had this different name called Luke the Drifter used for those particular sacred songs and those recitations like that song were. Therefore, being able to keep Hank's vibrancy in the honky-tonk market that very all-time high.
Can you imagine people, man, listening? If that were to make its way on a jukebox at Fred's Lounge, it would have been a catastrophe. Hugh Harris is going to come out again for us. Now, Hugh is not only a great singer and a great, very knowledgeable about Hank Williams, but he's also, as Terry said, a degreed expert in country music with a degree from
Northeast Mississippi Community College.
There you
and
go.
They did not offer a medical degree.
This is true. Now, the reason I say that is because Hugh's going to sing a song called Setting the Woods on Fire. It was written by Fred Rose and Ed Nelson, and it hit number one in 1952. I mean, hit number two. Hit number two. And I was thinking, how could a song like Setting the Woods on Fire, I mean, such a great song, how could that not get to number one? Do you know what kept it from number one? Who? Whose number one kept Setting the Woods on Fire from getting to number one? Hank. Hank's Jambalaya was number one, couldn't get to number one. And that got me thinking, 1952. 1952 is a very critical time in Hank's life. It's his last year alive. He was amazingly prolific. He had all sorts of top 10 hits, two number ones. And I just started thinking, what else was going on? Well, his divorce from Audrey was finalized in May. In October, he was fired from the Opry. He married Billie Jean at the dance we've been hearing about in October in New Orleans. He rejoined the Hayride about the same time, the Louisiana Hayride. All of this in 1952. He made what turned out to be his final recordings, that amazing September. Last session.
Yeah.
Just to give you an idea of when this was in the history of country music, Uncle Dave Macon died in March of that year. George Strait was born in May of that year.
George Hank, might not want you to tell that, but there it is.
Hank Thompson and his Brazos Valley Boys had the number one song of the year that year, according to Billboard. And what it was The Wild Side of Life. And a few weeks later, it stayed 15 weeks on a chart. A couple months later, in August, J.D. Miller's Answer Song was recorded by Kitty Wells. It Wasn't God Who Made Honky Tonk Angels, and it was the first song that went to number one, sung by a woman in country music. All of this is in this last year of Hank's life. So Jambalaya was number one for, I think it was 14 or 15 weeks, something like that. And what it dislodged to become number one was Kitty Wells' It Wasn't God Who Made Honky Tonk Angels. And what dislodged it to become number one was Webb Pierce's Hank Backstreet Affair in December. But
there
Jambalaya,
were some happy people around in 1952, you know what?
And Jambalaya came back to be number one for a short time, and then another Hank song became number one right after that.
I'll never get out of this world alive.
I'll never get out of this world alive, and he was on his way out. I mean, how prophetic is that? So anyway, this is a song that never made it to number one because of Hank's other song, something called Setting the Woods on Fire.
Comb your hair and paint and powder. You act proud and I'll act prouder. You sing loud and I'll sing louder. Tonight we're setting the woods on fire. You're my gal and I'm your fella. Dress up in your frock of yellow. I'll look swell, but you'll look sweller. Setting the woods on fire. We'll take in all the honky tonks. Tonight we're having fun. We'll show the folks a brand new dance that never has been done. I don't care who thinks we're silly. You be dapping, I'll be dilly. We'll order up two bowls of chili. Setting the woods on fire.
up my hot rod stoker. We'll get hotter than a poker. I'll be broke, but you'll be broker. Tonight we're setting the reds on fire. We'll set close to one another, up one street and down the other.
I'm telling you, Barry, I'm telling you, if we had just built this as Christofferson does Hank Williams, we'd have been just fine.
Might have worked. He was going to do another one, something that came out in 1951 on the other side of Hey Good Lookin', and something called My Heart Would Know.
I could say it's over. That I was glad to see you go. I could hate you for the way I'm feeling. My lips could tell a lie, but my heart would know. It's a sin. Make me cry when you know I love you so. I could tell this world I found a new love. My lips could tell a lie, but my heart would know.
Hugh Harris.